Michael Graham, NewHampshireJournal, NHJournal.com. I talked about the scene on college campuses. Excuse me, Michael's fired up on some local stories. Good morning, Michael.
Good morning. I don't know what you mean about local stories, Jack. I'm fired up on the same story you're fired up on, which is that the state of Massachusetts is proposing tolls at the state line targeting Granite Staters. And as we wrote at NHJournal.com, Governor Chris Sununu very unhappy about it. But what's interesting is Joyce Craig, of course, is the handpicked governor choice of Massachusetts Governor Maura Healey, whose administration is proposing this. And as we asked repeatedly, Mayor Craig, do you support this too? And her answer is no comment thus far. But the executive, the highway director, transportation secretary, Monica Tibbetts Nutt, who really puts the nut in nut, you could argue, says, I'm talking about tolling. When I'm talking tolling, I'm talking at the borders. I'm not talking within Massachusetts. And she says that they are going to, quote, all the people who should be giving us money to make our transportation better, we're going to go after them. So that's you, Jack. And she's the one who says that it's she's judging people who choose to drive large pickups like Ford F-150s. She says it's immoral. She wishes she could make it illegal. So it's going to be interesting to have Maura Healey pushing advocacy for sanctuary cities and tolls on Granite Staters, and then the candidate that she's supporting, Joyce Craig, running for governor here in New Hampshire.
You know, Massachusetts is a pretty big state. I grew up there but had the sense to move here a long time ago. But I got to ask you, what do people there think? You know, a person who's going to the job this morning who does real work, maybe an installer, granite installer, a home builder, and they're pull up their pickup truck and they're hearing this story, you and me talking about this and Matt.
Right.
What do they think? What do they think? Who are, number one, who puts these people in power? I mean, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And then, and you know, they don't even have the intelligence to, I posted this story, Michael, just give me 1 second, and someone on my page, actually he's a former WMUR TV person, and he's on my page, a good guy, a person, and he said, Jack, I agree with you on kind of the targeting pickup trucks, but what's your opposition to electric vehicles? So I want to address this. I don't have an opposition to electric vehicles, but let the marketplace determine the timing and acceptance. Look how major manufacturers were pushing this in the Biden administration. Wait till it's feasible. But if you want to have a debate on toxicity on Earth Day with me about the environment and the lithium and the cobalt that goes into an electric battery, or the generators in stations that require, like, diesel to power your electric charger, or you want to talk about the disposal of electric batteries or the production of these vehicles and where this cobalt and lithium come from, then have a discussion with me. But if you want to talk about a 2024 Ford F-150 with all the emission standards and everything about the environment, you don't understand that the electric vehicles are not as good for the environment as people think they are. They're a feel-good vehicle. They make you feel good because fossil fuels have become the enemy in Massachusetts. You know, in Lexington, Mass., they want to ban propane and your Weber grill?
Well, Jack, here's what I know. I know that one person who does not want to talk about the cost of electric vehicles or the consequences is Democratic candidate for governor Cindy Warmington. We have a story at NHJournal.com this morning about her, quote, clean energy economy plan that she released in time for Earth Day. And it would mandate all electric vehicles by 2040. So if you have a kid that's born today, by the time that kid gets to high school, it'll be riding to school in an electric vehicle. That's the window she has, just 15 years from now. She also, Jack, wants to ban all home heating oil, all natural gas, all by, once again, 2040. That's 10 years faster than Massachusetts in 2050. Now, it's easy to say, well, who cares because it's sheer idiocy and only a moron would believe for a second that this is even possible. It's so stupid that you can't take it seriously. But we do. When politicians say things, our job at NHJournal.com is to ask them questions. So we asked Executive Councilor Warmington. We have a $5.6 billion a year energy economy in New Hampshire. That's what it takes to run the state, which, by the way, Jack, is like 0.2 of the whole country, just to put it in perspective, 0.2%. How much is it going to cost to take away everyone's regular car and replace it with an EV take away everyone's home heating furnace that's oil or propane, et cetera. Also wood burners, Jack. That's about 6% of Granite Staters, too, who rely on wood as a primary source of heating. What will it cost? And her answer was no comment. No comment, cannot even find out. Now, once again, why ask what it costs? It's like saying we're all going to be riding goats and emus to work by 2040. It's so ludicrous on its face that it's hard to take seriously enough to even do the math. But once again, this is her proposal. She released it. It's out there. So we asked the question, how much will it cost? And the answer is, I'm not going to tell you.
Mm. Well, I'm sure.
So, Jack, are you ready?
Yep, go ahead.
Are you ready by 2040? 2040.
Yep.
Are you going to be ready to just be driving electric vehicles?
Again, if they make sense and they work and they have good mileage and they're dependable and they're affordable.
Jack, only. This is a zero emissions plan. Only electric vehicles.
It's like what are some of these people's opposition to natural gas? They don't even know you need natural gas to make electricity. Natural gas is one of the cleanest, most abundant resources we have. You're going to make us actually in a very unstable world, a very insecure country, if we don't allow economical ways to heat and run and power our homes and keep us warm with resources we control that we don't have to buy from countries that are our enemies, like OPEC and other countries, and allow a good mix of things like what works. Solar is good to add to the mix. Maybe the big windmills they're building up in Maine that break down and then they become scars in the landscape aren't so good. So don't force things. Just have a natural, non-emotional, non-political discussion about green energy and good energy on Earth Day. And there's nothing wrong with natural gas. There's nothing wrong with bringing in hybrids. There's nothing wrong with bringing in electric vehicles. But when you ramp stuff down people's throat prematurely based on your politics, that's a problem.
Net zero emissions by 2040. So, you know, just get ready for it, Jack. That's what Cindy Warmington says she's going to do as governor. That's what she's running on.
Yeah.
And so you can write that off. It won't matter that Massachusetts wants to take away your Ford F-150. You won't be able to drive it anyway because it'll have to be electric.
Or what's wrong with my Weber propane grill outside, but in Lexington, Mass, they don't want you to do that.
Jack, if I have to tell you what's wrong with it, you just don't understand. That's all I can.
I told people there's going to be a day when someone's going to knock on your door if you got a nice fire going with some dry wood and kindling and smoke coming out of your chimney and it's 20 below. So you can't have that fire. All right, thank you, Michael.
You're going to need that, Jack, you're going to need that fire because New England ISO, or I should say ISO New England, is already saying we don't have enough reliable electricity now for periods of extreme use, which, remember, that used to be the summer. You know what I mean? It used to be like Texas or California in August. They would have, those days are gone now because electricity is very good at AC. Electricity is terrible at making heat. And so now the danger is you have, what do they call it, the cold bomb or the Arctic zoom or whatever that thing that comes through. And ISO New England says right now we cannot guarantee that we can provide the electricity to heat homes today. What's going to happen in 15 years when every single home and business in the state is relying on electricity and you're not allowed to use the coal-fired power plant or the natural gas fired power plant to provide that electricity? What happens then? So you're going to need to burn something, Jack.
Yeah, I guess so. Well, you will keep it up. We'll keep an eye on it. All right, Michael Graham, NH Journal, NewHampshireJournal.com. Make it a good Earth Day. Doug Tengden, inflation. I don't know how that Inflation Reduction Act is working, but people all weekend are talking about everything going up, including the price of gas. Good morning, Doug, on the World Market Advisor side.
Good morning, Jack. Yeah, that with that intro, I mean, gas prices shocked me. I had to take a little trip down to Massachusetts this weekend. Oh, God.
I hope you didn't drive a pickup truck. They're targeting you.
No, I was actually in my mini skateboard. But it is shocking what has happened to gas prices. But, of course, I mean, that's to be expected with unrest in the Middle East. And certainly there was the unrest a couple weeks ago, last week. That affects gas prices. What's more persistent is the price of core services, the price of rent, the price of getting your car fixed, the price of things that require lots of people to work on them. That has remained sticky, and that's what's keeping core inflation higher.
Mm. You know, Doug, I was talking to some folks over the weekend, like you would, and a couple of realtors and just a couple of friends. We were just talking about and Mike Pomp this morning and I were talking about Dover, how high real estate pricing is. Even some of these new condominiums they're building for, not specifically 50 and over, but that's the feel. you know, not even on the water, but, you know, $1 million for a two-bedroom, two-bath condo with a parking space, and people are buying them. And, you know, you're like, whoa, 7.5% fixed rate right now. I think it's over 7% again. Price of gas, price of energy, price of inflation. It's like, wow, everything is expensive. And there's affordable housing. Good luck finding it.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Post-COVID, real estate prices took a jump, and they're remaining higher despite the fact that interest rates are higher. Well, why are they higher? People simply took their houses off the market, themselves out of the market, when interest rates rose. So even though interest rates rose, a lot of people thought, oh, well, that would crash real estate. Well, it didn't, because people just are sitting on these 3% mortgages that they had back, you know, that they refinanced during COVID.
Yeah. What else is cooking?
Well, what else is cooking? I mean, geopolitics is in the spotlight. I mean, I can't believe that you can whisper "don't" and then do nothing over the issues last week. I mean, that is clearly on the radar. And of course, this week we're going to get the most important number for the Fed: the core inflation numbers, PCE, core services. That's really what the Fed is looking at, and hopefully the Fed will say, gee, things are not as bad as we thought. There was some talk last week that maybe the Fed would raise rates again. That's not going to happen. Don't sweat the Fed starting to raise rates again. But I do think they need to move back towards a more sustainable core level of rates. You know, 5% is clearly too high. Everybody knows that. The Fed simply needs to get off the dime and ease things back, because eventually – they will slow the economy faster than they think.
Yeah, you know, Doug, I was actually thinking, you know, back before the State of the Union, I actually was thinking that maybe the economy wasn't, because you were hearing soft landing and all these things. I'm now wondering. I'm talking the presidential election. I'm more political than you on some. I'm now wondering if the economy might not be a bigger issue than, for example, the incumbent president thought. I'm beginning to wonder, because we don't know where things are going to be at this fall. We really don't.
Absolutely. And I'll say this, just from sort of preliminary earnings statements, we're starting to hear some warnings of softening. Not dramatic, nothing falling off a cliff, but the credit card companies are saying, yeah, we're not seeing quite as strong demand as we saw in the first quarter.
But you know what, Doug, you and I know that when people hear the word recession, it really depends on you and how you feel, that household budget. And the recession word is one thing when the economy is slowing, and it used to be two consecutive quarters negative GDP, but, you know, they changed that definition a while ago. But my point is, inflation is just such a nasty, unfair tax, and especially on people with less income or less liquidity, because everything costs so much. And if independent voters in that line, are you better off today than you were 4 years ago? If they're struggling this fall, if they are behind, if they have too much debt and they can't pay the energy bill, the food bill, the kids bill, the health care, if they just feel swamped, you know what? They're not going to be happy with their pocketbooks and wallet, despite what's going on in the Middle East, despite Ukraine, despite the southern border, and despite a lot of other stuff. They're just not going to, and abortion rights, they're going to feel, wait a minute, I can't afford the third week of every month to pay my bills. That's going to translate into their vote.
I totally agree. I totally agree. And just to get back to something you were talking about earlier, defining inflation, the level of economic ignorance on all levels is astounding.
Yeah.
It's just astounding. If you go ahead and ask every candidate that comes onto your program, Jack, ask them, tell me, what causes inflation? And, oh, by the way, what causes economic prosperity? Okay, ask them those two questions, please, as a favor.
You know
what's
scary?
Do that.
Yeah, I will, Doug. And you know what? You and I know this. If you ask half the members in Congress the same questions, they would stumble and bumble for an answer.
Absolutely. More than half. I'd say three quarters. The level of ignorance is astounding everywhere. They think economy comes from extraction. It doesn't come from extraction. It comes from innovation. Innovation service. That's what it's all about.
Yeah. All right, Doug Teng, the best place to find your website?
WorldMarketAdvisors.com, World Market Advisors, one word. And, of course, you can get my regular blog updates on the WorldMarketUpdate.com.
Thanks, buddy. Have a good one. Enjoy the weather.
Jack, you have a great week.
Anna Brown, Citizens Count, CitizensCount.org. You can comment on all the above. It's Earth Day, but we have legislative stuff at Concord and under the Gold Dome. And Anna's got a great bipartisan, nonpartisan home site and effort keeping us informed on all our local legislative matters. Take it away, Anna.
Absolutely. So this week is, I often focus on, oh, those lesser known issues under the radar, but this week there are some big blockbuster public hearings in Concord.
Blockbuster.
It's amazing. It feels like blockbuster. It feels like they're fitting in all the really hot topics in just 1 week. So first of all, today we have a hearing on SB 375, which would restrict women's sports based on biology at birth in grades 6 and up. Then on Wednesday, we have a bill, HB 1283, that is a medical aid in dying bill. Some people call this physician-assisted suicide. Surprisingly, passed the House with pretty strong support. And so I think everyone is looking to see what's going to happen in the Senate, which is where this hearing is going to be on Wednesday. Thursday, we have another bill related to gender. HB 619 would ban gender reassignment surgery for minors. This one passed after a controversial in the House, and I think controversial vote in the House. It had a couple Democrats crossing party lines to support it. They got a lot of heat. I think it faces, probably going to pass in the Senate since it is Republican control by several votes. And then also on Thursday, HB 1633, which is this year's marijuana legalization bill. So I think it's almost funny. It's almost like they scheduled all of these bills in the same week because they were thinking to themselves, and I'm speculating here, but all right, we know there's going to be overwhelming amounts of people talking on all of these. So let's just bang it out. Let's just get it all done in 1 week. And then there's going to be limited time because we're going to have to move on to the next bill because we have a whole lot of bills we're talking about. I will say, though, there is, because I have to pull out the ones that are lesser known as well, the one that I am watching this week is SB 431, which is a bill that would regulate and restrict wake surfing. Now, I did not realize this was such a huge issue, but hundreds of people signed in for and against this bill in the House of in the Senate, and now it's on its way to the House of Representatives. And I am very curious to see what's going to happen here, since apparently, based on the number of people signing in, this has been a huge controversy in New Hampshire, particularly in areas with lakes. And the idea is, all right, you know, how close or far from shore can these boats be, and other operating restrictions. And so wake surfing, I don't know if that's something you've ever enjoyed or encountered, Jackie, but it looks like it's a bit of an underground debate happening in New Hampshire these days.
Underground. Blockbuster. Wow. A lot going on. It's interesting. We don't have budgetary stuff. In other words, we're not in a budget battle. Sometimes when they're trying to do that, it'll go all the way to end of June. Really, a lot of this stuff is thematic, and we're seeing the national stuff play here locally, right?
Absolutely. That when you're talking about the issues related to gender, those in particular are national issues. Marijuana legalization, in a way, is a national issue because it's playing out in regionally. Certainly, it's brought up so often that all of the surrounding states in New Hampshire have legalized marijuana in one form or another. And then, obviously, one topic I did not bring up that I would also say typically blockbuster is those immigration-related bills. And those have certainly been chugging along. It's just that they don't have those public hearings this week. But you are correct that in those non-budget years in New Hampshire, that's generally when you'll see that more sort of social issue legislation pop up, because the idea is, all right, we've done the brass tacks, we've looked at taxes, we've looked at, you know, different business regulations and so on, and school funding. And although they are looking to change school funding this year, all of that typically happens in the budget year. And that's why it opens up for these social issues in a non-budget year.
You know, Anna, I don't mean to date myself, but Anna Brown, CitizensCount.org, we have some time if you have a few extra moments on this Monday morning talking some policy. I shared with J-Dog the other day, you know, the effect of Massachusetts on New Hampshire politics has sort of been prevalent and strong at times, and then it kind of was more subtle and wasn't always an issue. And I remember when I first went down to Channel 5 in Boston, CVB-TV as a reporter, Don Fratangelo was an anchor. Because I lived in New Hampshire, we did a series called Border Wars, where she was sort of defending Massachusetts. I was defending New Hampshire. It was a very well-received ratings period, where we just kind of debated and argued and did stories about the merits of New Hampshire, no income, no sales tax, and so forth. But anyway, the point is, there's always been this Massachusetts influence on New Hampshire. I think you'd agree. And I'm now noticing over the weekend, when Kelly Ayotte first announced, and Chuck Morris has said similar things, but she, one of her lines was on my show was, Jack, we're one election away from becoming Massachusetts. And then you have like Joyce Craig, Cindy Warmington running for governor. I'm talking about the governor's race. And you know, basically, Governor Healey in Massachusetts, I noticed over the weekend, Governor Sununu is slamming a proposed transportation idea in Massachusetts to start at the tolls to charge more money for, like, a New Hampshire pickup truck coming through than an electric vehicle. And Sununu slammed that. You know, we talked about the sanctuary city differences in Massachusetts. And I'm wondering, in the governor's race, are the Republicans and the Democrats, whoever the nominees, are they going to be sort of make, is this Massachusetts theme? We don't want to become that. We don't want to become what Massachusetts is. Or we're okay with what Massachusetts is doing on energy, for example, you know, banning, you know, Lexington, Mass, banning propane, banning fossil fuels, sanctuary cities, charging more for pickup drivers from New Hampshire at the tolls. I'm just wondering if this little Massachusetts flair might be a little more of a dust up as one, some of the issues on the debates in the governor's race.
Well, I think that contrasting New Hampshire and Massachusetts has been an issue for my entire life. And I moved to New Hampshire when I was 3. So I like to claim that I am a New Hampshire native. I know that some hardcore people might disagree. Literally my entire life, this has been a joke, and particularly about Massachusetts drivers and, you know, Massachusetts people coming up during vacation. But the fact of the matter is, we have a very strong symbiotic relationship with Massachusetts when it comes to all of the workers that commute in both directions either day. You know, I think it's about 15% of New Hampshire residents commute to Massachusetts for work, and I'm not sure what it is going the other direction, but I'm certain that there's some of that going on too. And then when you're looking at the regions of our state, I think the southern part of the state, if you're looking at Salem, if you're looking at Nashua, there's incredibly strong ties to Massachusetts. And so there's some sort of needs to be a recognition that there is going to be some overlap of development and those corridors of travel and all that. It's very important to keep the health of the economy of both states. That being said, I think it's always been a bit of a boogeyman. I think that New Hampshire is still an incredibly different economy, an incredibly different geography than Massachusetts, just vast differences in population size, in population diversity, and in all of these areas. And so I don't think we are like one election away from becoming Massachusetts, as Kelly said, because I think there's so many other differences that create New Hampshire beyond just who's in office. And I think that when we're especially looking at the state House of Representatives, you know, largest House of Representatives of any state in the nation, right, so close to the people at the local level, really, you know, hard to even completely gerrymander the state House of Representatives because there are right. so many districts, it gets very complex. So I think that there's a lot of institutional aspects to New Hampshire that can't be changed overnight or turned into a different state.
It's interesting. George Hansel Keene on social media this morning saying he's not going to run as a Republican in the 2nd Congressional District. You know, Vikram Antrimani, Lily Tang Williams, a couple. We know it looks like Senator Whitley of the Capital Region and Colin Van Ostern on the Democrat side. So it's going to be interesting this fall. We don't have a major U.S. Senate race this fall, but we have the presidential question, and we're going to have an open governor's race for the first time in, you know, 8 years. It's going to be interesting if that trend that we've seen, Anna, when you mentioned New Hampshire is different than, say, Mass, if we see the congressional seats in Congress, because there's no Senate race, stay Democrat, but do we see a Republican governor and a majority in the state House Republican, that kind of dichotomy split, like federal stuff, Democrat, local control, state House Republican. It'll be interesting to see if that trend continues.
Right. Absolutely.
All right. Anna Brown, Citizens Count, enjoy the sunshine. Thank you.
Thanks, Jack.
Rory, I'd love to get your take on what's happening on college campuses, but let's go back, because we haven't talked about the Ukraine in a while. House Speaker Johnson hanging in there, passing that package in terms of Ukrainian support.
Yeah, and the House now is on recess this week, so the question is, what happens when they reconvene next week? Will Speaker Johnson's job be on the line? We know Marjorie Taylor Greene filed that motion to vacate back before Easter, but she hasn't called for the vote yet. And after the Saturday passage of that massive foreign aid spending plan, she may finally decide to call for the vote. And I don't know, it's a bit of a coin toss, but we have heard some Democrats may step in and bail out the speaker.
Yeah, it's interesting, yeah. And who knows where it goes. There's such a thin line there. I want to switch gears, Roy. You're one of the first people, and I have a pretty okay memory, where you actually did something that few people do. You checked out for like over a year. You went around the world. You traveled around the world. Something that only people would say like in a, on a relaxing weekend by a campfire. You actually did it. So you have a pretty good perspective, I've noticed, about things. Do you agree or not that if you wake up this morning and you look at what's happening on Columbia University's campus, Yale, and police in riot gear, and this, what's going on, do you almost feel like you're in the late 60s or something? Or, I mean, doesn't it feel almost like we're back in the 60s on college campuses in America? Clashing with police, tear down the American society.
Who saw this coming 3 or 4 months ago, right? I mean, there was all this unity after the attack of October 7th, unity behind Israel. And then, wow, to see things change over the past 6 months has been pretty remarkable. And now these ugly protests and the ugly language that we're hearing is just remarkable. And seeing schools now scramble to close.
I mean, free speech is fine. Peaceful free speech. That's fine, but is where do you define hate speech when you start talking about we're pro-Hamas, death to Israel, and tear down the American society? You know, this is that free speech? I don't know. I'm asking you. I don't know.
A lot of it is ignorance. I mean, a lot
I know.
There's an awful lot of ignorance out there.
Thank you for saying it, because I know, and this is from being a dad, okay?
Right.
And, you know, I'm just saying, kids today, that old line, you know you're getting older when you say kids today, but what you just said about ignorance, I have to tell you, you'll find it on your own if you get a break between your new national news stuff.
Yep.
There's a great video, not a great video, Columbia, of like the students setting up over the weekend for this protest, and I had to laugh. They're getting the bed sheets out, they've spray painted, this is a liberated zone. You know, this is, we're anti-Israel, we're pro-Palestine. They got the Hamas, they got the stickers over here. Hamas is good. Tear down the American society. And then you get a couple of like young college students. They're coming over, and what you could hear the video. The guy was just, they had like a guy filming it or a gal. And you could hear I'm sorry, being a dad of gal, I just have to say it. So please forgive the imitation. It's out of respect to a point. Oh, it's so cool. I'm going to protest today. I don't have to go to I'm not going to go to class. I'm going to order out a wrap. Can I lay down? We're going to catch some rays. What are we protesting? It's like, wow. Wow.
Yeah.
Unbelievable.
And if you showed them a map, I bet you half of them couldn't find these areas on us.
Yeah. Well, they had one guy with a camera going around, kind of like a I don't know if he's a news organization or not.
Right.
Did Hamas attack Israel on October 7th? They're like, no. Israel's doing all this.
Right.
Anyway, all right, Rory, thank you. Rory O'Neill, NBC News. President and CEO of Northeast Delta Dental, Tom Raffio. His show on the weekends as well. And stories from the starting line. Good Monday morning, Tom.
Good morning. What a beautiful but windy day. I was just over at NHTI. And good news. We just presented them with their $500,000 check to enhance the dental hygiene school. Because
I was just praising our community colleges. That's awesome.
And the reason is because many dentists are really busy between commercial patients, private patients, and Medicaid, but there's a shortage of hygienists, so that we're actually graduating this year 36, and this check will help facilitate, you know, new equipment, expanding the class a little bit, and so we're trying to solve a public policy matter, and that's the great thing about Delta Dental. I'm not bragging, but we look at things from a public policy perspective in addition to local customer service. So I had that great pleasure today. I'll send you a photo of it so you can see it.
And I love that. That's awesome.
And then back to NHTI. Friday night, we had a race over there, and the campus raises funds for scholarships for the students over there that need scholarships to graduate. So it was a great night Friday. And then the next morning, we rolled down to Derry, Londonderry, and Wyndham for what's called, it's kind of a funny name, but it's called the Cheap Marathon because it's kind of a no-frills marathon going on the rail trail. I don't know if people have been down to the Wyndham and Derry rail trails, but they're terrific. So my wife, who ran Boston on last Monday, then ran Saturday. I just stick with the 5K, Jack, to be honest with you, at this point in my life. And then, since you mentioned story from the starting line, we have one of our favorite races. And I know you're a dog lover. We have a Franklin race this Saturday at 9 a.m. And then Sunday, There's another race, and listening to you a lot, I know that you, in fact, you just said it this morning, I think, that the Revolutionary War or whatever really began at Newcastle. We actually have a Newcastle 5K on Sunday.
Oh, do you?
So, yeah, we did, and I'm not making that up. So, so I like to connect the dots for you, Jack, you know.
Someone has to.
And Stories from the Starting Line is going great. Fun's there. Go to Oral Health for Veterans, and for my veterans friends, we get about 5 a week now. Give me a call at 223-1300, and if you're not eligible for the VA, and if you're not eligible for Medicaid, you know, Dr. Mitch Carey will take care of you. Generally speaking, after I have this Monday appearance, I then get the calls, Jack. So you definitely have a following. So thanks,
Tom,
for giving.
Before I let you go, though, you just sort of glossed over it. Giving a check to NHTI to, you know, promote the dental hygiene program. That's a big story. That's a real good. That's great.
Yeah, no, and we've built our reserves just to do that. We're not, you know, we're technically a 501c4 nonprofit, so we're not driven by Wall Street. So we want to give back our reserves for public policy items like that. And then also, since dentists are struggling paying their hygienists, we're going to be giving them additional up to $5 million, a separate $5 million to our dentists to help support the hygienists they have currently working for them. So I do try to do my real job from time to time.
I mean, if you look at the number of veterans you've been able to get oral health care, that hygienist program, what you do in the communities, it's unbelievable. That's what matters. You know, it makes a difference.
That's why when I moved from Massachusetts, I know you were sort of ragging on Massachusetts today. When I moved from Massachusetts in 95, I thought it would be like a 5-year gig. But once you get here, it's like, oh my God, you can make such a difference. And so you talk about the veterans, since you identified that shortage or that need about 7 or 8 years ago, we've invested about $1 million in New Hampshire and about $500,000 in Maine just for oral health for veterans, and another $200,000 in Vermont. So,
awesome.
So thank you. So that's why I listen to your show. I'm always learning. So
well,
we'll talk Friday. All right,
enjoy
thanks for everything.
Enjoy the sunshine.
I will. Thank you. Bye bye.